The Dan Bernstein Show. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Speak up.
I love college football chaos. We're going to start with Nick Saban bitching about name, image, and likeness and apparently slandering Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M.
I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right, we didn't buy one player. All right, but I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it.
We do it the right way. They're all buying players. Their quarterback made $1 million last year.
$1 million.
So we do it the right way. Jimbo Fisher, the head coach of that Texas A&M program that he referenced, who used to be Saban's guy, he's not his guy anymore.
We never bought anybody. No rules were broken. Nothing was done wrong. It's despicable that a reputable head coach could come out and say this.
You're despicable.
The Dan Bernstein Show.
The narcissist in him when he's not on top. And the parody in college football he's been talking about, go talk to coaches who coach for him. You'll find out all the parody. Go dig into wherever he's been.
Damn.
On The Score.
There it is. And there was a little bit more as they tried very, very hard to put that genie back in the bottle. Is that the right metaphor? I don't know. Toothpaste back in the tube. Whatever you want, but good luck. The SEC commissioner came right and was like, everybody stop talking. Nobody say anything until we figure out what we're supposed to say about any of this. Damn. Well, it's all right, because I think there's a lot of people trying to figure out what the hell that was and just what happened in all of that. And the White Sox won, and that was nice, and things were good. The process by which everything happened didn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense, though. So we're going to get into that as we get ready for a big series for these White Sox headed to New York, and we'll find out what they are. Cody Decker is going to join us at 10. We are going to do the Midday Midway at 10:40. We've got Joe Ostrowski at 11:25. And we have a lot more in the hopper as well here at Sports Radio 670 on a lovely Friday morning. Yeah, my head is still spinning. I'm still recovering from Doctor Strange. I think I was in the multiverse of madness. Man, good luck. And even going back and reading what all that was, like, I think I kind of get it. And I don't really care. So I know there's all sorts of stuff in there that I missed, but I did see Bruce Campbell, and you stick around for the make sure, as you know, these Marvel movies, that you got to make sure you're there for the button at the end credit scene, that you got to wait through everything. So it is definitely worth it. But I guess I was a little bit thrown for a loop on the drive in thinking about the White Sox, because here we are with, yay, 7 runs. Oh, my God, 7 runs against the Royals. See what happens when you walk 5 times? You see what happens there? You see the correlation there between making a pitcher work, stressing him out, getting him out of the stretch instead of the windup, having everybody think about who's positioned where, making a defense have to play closer to certain bases that opens the possibility that balls are going to get through him, and all the stuff that happens when you see a lot of pitches, when you work deep counts, you get guys on base. Walks are runs. Walks are runs. Walks are runs. On base percentage is life. On base percentage correlates to runs. It really isn't all that hard. It really isn't. And you can't just rely on hitting a bunch of home runs. Get guys on base. Good things happen to you. And we're going to get to what happened with Adam Engel and all that. But there's a couple things that I heard when Score baseball reporter Bruce Levine was on with Mulligan Hall this morning on my drive in, and there were a couple things that I just want to make sure I heard right, because it's going to force me to maybe into a drastic recalibration of my expectations I didn't think I would do. I want to start with what he said about the White Sox and walking and the lack of bases on balls. They right now are last in baseball, 30th of 30 in walk percentage. Last year, they were fourth. Let me say that again. This year, they're last. Last year, they were fourth.
I can say Eloy is a part of this, although Eloy wasn't Eloy when he came back last year. So I guess you could refute that. But realistically, a 289 on base percentage, you know, and you know, 87 walks in 30, you know, five games. That's not going to get it done. Now, this team has never walked. It's not, you know, they haven't relied on the walk other than Grandal. Nobody walks on this team. That really bites them because they get taken advantage of offensively by, you know, pitchers knowing they can pitch out of the zone. And they're not necessarily going to strike out, but they're going to mishit the ball. And that is a problem. I mean, you have some great hitters on the Chicago White Sox, but, you know, on-base percentage is just not there for them because of the fact that they don't walk.
Now, last year, the White Sox were third in on-base percentage. And a lot of the projections of their success this year was based on that. Last year, they were on base a lot. They were on base. They were the third best on base behind Houston and Washington. And by tiny little bits, too. Houston's on-base average was 339. The Nationals were 337. The White Sox were 336. And then it's a big drop off to Toronto at 330. Like they were among the very best in baseball last year at getting on base. And this year they're not. You know, this is what's really troubling me. If all of a sudden that expectation is completely off the table, then I'm not sure how we're supposed to expect them to, because you know where they are this year? They're 28th. They were third last year and on base percentage. They're 28th this year. Okay, fine. If we presume that's going to moderate a little bit, we presume that there's going to be some regression to the mean, maybe that's a hopeful sign. Maybe it just is. Maybe you get a lot of guys there's going to be a massive regression to the mean here. But what about the larger picture of their offensive production? This was Bruce this morning.
White Sox had the potential to score a lot of runs. They have a lot of good hitters. But at this point in time, after 35 games, there is concern. I mean, David and I talk about it every Saturday, Mike, on Inside the Clubhouse. Don't count on the White Sox being an offensive juggernaut. It just might not be there. The pitching has been, I think, plenty good enough. But you're going to struggle. You're going to lose some tight games, some 3-2, some 4-3 games because the offense isn't firing.
Then forget it. If Bruce is right, this is over. It's over. And Bruce has seen a lot more baseball than I have. If he's right, you can forget all of it. Any expectations, any excitement, any hopes and dreams are you, if don't expect any, and a lot of it this is semantics, don't expect them to be an offensive juggernaut. Fine. But here's what they were last year. Last year, they were first in pitching wins above replacement. First. They had the highest WAR among pitchers. They had a great pitching year, an outlier great pitching year. And you know what else they were? They were fourth in weighted runs created plus, the best single offensive stat in all of baseball. They were the fourth best team. You could argue the fourth best offensive team. They were fourth best in offensive runs above average. They were fourth best in walk percentage. They were one of the best teams in baseball. And this year, they're 30th in walk percentage. They're 24th in weighted runs created plus. They're 20th in offensive runs above average. That's a massive drop-off. So if that's it, if we can't expect them to be a top five offense, a top five run producing team, they're in terrible trouble. Unless there's a massive change here. But if that's where I'm have to recalibrate my expectations, this thing's off the rails then, if that's true. This year they're 11th in pitching WAR. Pretty good. You know, top third. They're a top third team in pitching WAR. They're the worst defensive team in baseball. All this game is scoring runs and preventing runs. That's wins and losses. It's the math is relatively simple. You score runs, you prevent runs. And in there, in that difference, is winning and losing. If they're not going to score runs, and they're not going to be all that great at preventing them, They're not going to win enough. Last year, the defense wasn't great either. Last year, they were only 26th in defensive runs above average. A lot of that was their lack of desire to position their defense. That's a huge issue. So I just got to make sure we know what we're talking about here. With everything we're doing with White Sox expectations, what we're expecting and why. But if all of a sudden it's like, hey, just I was really thrown for a loop there. If a professional baseball observer, a veteran professional baseball observer said, don't expect the White Sox to be an offensive juggernaut to win to 3-2 games, then they're screwed because their defense isn't good enough. And last year they needed to be a great offense. Because to overcome that defense. And last year, they had one of the best, if not the best pitching staff in all of baseball for much of the year. I don't know. I've got to figure out where these expectations are. We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. 312-644-6767 is the Score listener line, powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. If you want to send an email, that goes to Bernstein Show at 670thescore.com. You go there to listen to us live. We stream at 670thescore.com. We have texting. Oh, boy, we have texting. It is in the text zone, brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. When you text, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein Show. You can follow me at Dan_Bernstein. Make sure you download the Odyssey app to stream the Score on your mobile devices. You can interact on Facebook if you have the stomach for it. Twitch is also the fun place to be. Twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. And if you look at Twitch right now, as I am, you can see that we have one producer. It is just Rick Camp, our executive producer, Mike Rankin, with a well-deserved day off today. So Rick is in full space command with the help of Brandon Fryer, who is in the back. The Twitch stream, the video feed, the chat is, the moderation of that chat is all done by the team of Connor O'Donnell and Evan Thomas. We appreciate their help with that. When we come back, let's talk a little bit. I know there's some callers that want to jump in as well with some of this stuff. The angle pinch hit yesterday. I think it's their first pinch hit. Is that right? Their first actual pinch hit of the year? I think they were the only team without one. Not a pinch hit opportunity. Not a pinch plate appearance, but an actual hit from a pinch hitter.
Correct.
They got that yesterday from Adam Engel, even though he wasn't sure that he was going to come in and pinch hit for the catcher. I don't know about the process yet. We got to figure out why it happened, why things happened in the order that it did. So we'll let Engel talk about it, and we'll hear how it sounded on the broadcast as we get ready for White Sox and Yankees. Ooh, you have the Score.
So now Tony's going to use Engel to hit for McGuire. He didn't use him for Gavin Sheets, and you're going to have to use Grandal anyway to play catcher. So couldn't you make the argument that you would use Engel for Sheets and Grandal for McGuire?
You could. Yeah, absolutely you could.
Adam left center field. Sox take the lead. Pinch hit RBI for Adam Engel, and it's 5-4 Sox in the seventh.
You never know with Tony. You know, he likes to put you in spots that you might not expect. So, pinch hitting for a catcher wasn't necessarily something I was thinking about doing right there. But I was ready, and, you know, we got a great hitting coaches that helped me stay ready down there. So, worked out today.
Okay, and, you know, we sort of heard it creeping into the broadcast a little bit. There were some very, very pregnant pauses and the use of the word interesting is usually a tell for how some of that stuff went down. The process matters. The process matters. How those decisions get made, who's doing what and when, and who's where on that switch. And talking about this level of expectations and how many runs they should score and what we should expect from this offense, White Sox fans are a twisted lot sometimes. And there's one for the 815 that says, holy crap, Bernstein, the Sox win, but you don't like how they did it? You're the kind of guy, if you were given $1 million, would bitch about the color of the bag. Dude, grow up. This is a team with World Series expectations. You want to win a title? Listen to what the team told you after they got bounced out of the playoffs last year by a better team. That they were going to get better at all this stuff. That they were going to get better around the edges. Stop being a fanboy. Hold your team to a higher standard. Wins are great, but they need a hell of a lot more of them. They need a lot more of them. And they've got to do baseball better right now. And the process has to make more sense. They saw it at the time. It's like you're going to, here's Sheets, and then, I mean, you can use Grandal himself. I don't know why Reese McGuire's playing as much as he's playing, let alone A.J. Pollock and Leury Garcia. You know, I'm hopeful somehow they can just snap out of this. But we're already, it's May 20th, man. It's a lot of games that have been played. There's, if a regression is coming, it's got to come fast. And if you start looking at run differential by the middle of last year, you know what this team kind of is. The first half White Sox last year, that was a juggernaut. And they ended up, the final numbers ended up great. But for a while now, they haven't been all that good. They're going to need to get significantly better at all of this if they're going to win the World Series. Unless maybe I'm misreading the room here, and maybe you've written them off already. Maybe you're like, Bernstein, why do you keep talking about this team like it's a champion? It's just not, and we're done. But I didn't think it was that obvious that so many people were already ready to be done with it. Maybe that's what it is. I don't want to feel like I'm the last one trying to have higher expectations for a Sox team that went out of its way to put together a contender with as veteran pitchers and a 35-year-old former MVP first baseman. I don't know. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm misreading the room, and this is all just okay with everybody. Oh, look, this should be fun. Bill in Capitol Hill is out today. What's up, Bill?
Panic. Professor, would you say this is time for people to start cracking open each other's skull and feasting on the goo inside? Yes, I would.
Yes,
Ken.
I would.
This team is going to take years off my life, right? And it's, as you say, the problem is that they don't have any margin left, right? They cannot be a team that slumps in any facet of the game because, as you've noticed, their defense is, their defense is like wacky bad, right? Like almost fun bad. And if we've seen, like if they have a little dip in pitch, I mean, yesterday, they lose a challenge and it gives the Royals an extra out. I think it was about the second or third inning. And they turn that into a run. And you can see Vince Velasquez, who's doing yeoman's labor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's got – his stuff isn't that bad, but he's got to work so hard as a pitcher, right? Because everybody knows they can steal on the White Sox and they can take an extra base. And that if they hustle down to first base, that there's a good chance – that the Sox will throw it in the dugout. And you've got a manager there who has spent his entire career being the smartest guy in the room. And it reminds me of Hemingway's line, how rich people go broke two ways, very slowly and then all at once. It's like Tony La Russa, this game has passed him by, and the problem is that ordinary schmoes like me can see it. And so I don't know why I'm doing this to my. I know why. I'm a secret masochist.
Yes, that's why you're doing it.
Between me and my therapist and my special lady friend with the whips. But here's the thing, right? Like, Jerry Reinsdorf is the only human on the planet who can make being a mensch feel like a burden and a weight on everybody else, right? Because at one level, I have to appreciate his loyalty and his sense of obligation, but it's going to destroy, like this, the whole point of this team wasn't just creating new fans and building a new Twitter empire, et cetera, and embracing modern baseball and making baseball better for everybody. That part of the bargain that Rick Hahn struck with us fans is that this would be redemption for the lost year of 94.
Yeah.
And this check has bounced now. and it's bounced because Reinsdorf can't get out of his own way.
Unfortunately, Bill, what you've done is you've made me picture a dungeon dominatrix with a cat of nine tails, a White Sox hat, and Shane Reardon's beard.
Who doesn't think about that? I mean, apparently.
Get out of here. Dumbass. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I laugh to keep from crying. Kevin in Glen Ellen, you're on the score.
Hey, Dan. Love your show. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I was resigned to the fact that this wasn't a World Series team after the offseason was over. Not to say that they can't win the World Series, but basically what the moves in the offseason showed me was ownership and management was willing to win the World Series in a best-case scenario. That plugging holes with journeymen with bad statistics who had some sort of theoretical upside, it's fine, but it's not taking advantage of this young core that seemed to all be coming into their prime at the same time, which is so hard to pull off. And when you have that, that's when you sign those, quote, bad contracts, those deals that you know are going to be dead money at the end, you know, overpaying in free agency. That's when you have to make those moves. So, you know, Rodon's not on the team, you know, and he put up an incredible first half last year. And as soon as the offseason was over, I'm thinking to myself, this is a worse team than the year before. And that's what I think it is. And maybe they'll change my mind and make some moves in the trade. I don't think they have any trade pieces anyway, though, really. So I don't know. They screwed it up in the offseason. That's how I feel about it.
Well, I love the way you phrased that, bringing in veteran players with bad statistics. You know what those are called in my world? Bad players. Because the statistics are what we use to measure how good the players are. And I'm like Bill as a White Sox masochist where I'm going to keep watching and I'm going to keep hoping and I'm going to keep sacrificing to my shrine to Luis Robert that is still next to my Ivan Calderon shrine, who still is my favorite. But Luis and Eloy are in that tradition, as long as they walk around with enough buttons unbuttoned on their respective shirts and have enough gold chains. But there's just so many. There's so many leaks. There's so many things that aren't done well enough. It's not tight, whatever they're doing, and it just seems like they allow themselves more ways to potentially lose games by just not tightening up the screws all the way around. And ultimately it comes back to the attention, the quality, the ability of the manager to get the most out of all of these guys. Do they have the best roster in the world? Have they spent enough money? No, they haven't. They haven't. They could manager-proof their team more, but that's really expensive to do that. You can. To make each decision a little bit better by having each next player he goes to be a little bit better. And unfortunately, there's not much you can do now. Because once the season starts, I mean, like going to get Johnny Cueto off the scrap heap, off a couch, or Jason Peters' fishing boat, wherever he was, well, that's not going to do it. But Leury García and A.J. Pollock and Reese McGuire, these are just names, these are just dudes, these are just guys.
Cueto was on Jason Peters' fishing boat?
Probably. That's where I have them.
The sturdy boat.
We're going to need a bigger boat. Oh, by the way, this is apropos of nothing. Did you see, speaking of Jaws, and I meant to send this to Nick Shepkowski, I hope he's listening, the kid from Jaws, who was the kid with the fake shark fin as he's swimming around right before the actual shark shows up in the lagoon, and the kid that kid was just named police chief of a small town in Massachusetts on the coast or something like that. Is that amazing?
It's incredibly random.
I don't know why it just popped into my head. I saw it this morning. The young actor, that little boy in 1975 that played that kid, is now a police chief doing sort of like what Chief Brody did at the time. Just one of those cool little ways in which the universe harmonizes with itself. Not the multiverse of madness. That's different. Someone's going to have to explain it to me. I mean, I tried. And then I read it. And I'm like, nope. I can't. I'm sorry. I got a little Bruce Campbell. I got some very Sam. I got all the Sam Raimi stuff I wanted. All the camera movements. All the projectile camera stuff. And all the tropes. And all the fights. And all the noises. And that's all I needed. Because the rest of it, I got nothing for you. If you want me to explain what happened in whatever that was. Cody Decker is all things to all baseball people. And he's going to make his regular Friday appearance next on The Score.